We'll toast our way into the April 13th, 2013 rain report in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Imagine teaching a class in what amounts to be an empty classroom. With this rain report, I'm Kent Peterson, KC0DGY. It's happening today to Dr. Jeff Butterfield, N7TJB, a professor at Western Kentucky University. Rain's Hap Holly, KC9RP, spoke with Butterfield in the rain booth during the 2012 Dayton Hamvention. As customary during such conversations, Hap began by asking Jeff about his ham radio roots.
I've been a ham radio operator really since I was old enough to get a 10-speed bike and pedal across town to the FCC headquarters, which we used to have to do back when I was 11 years old. By the way, I'm converging on 50, so you can do the math.
Well, let's talk about how you got into ham radio. What drove you to that?
That's an interesting question. A lot of people today, I think there's so much technology, and the internet, you know, for kids today is so ubiquitous. I can tell you what it was. I was 5 years old, and my parents, for Christmas, on a whim, bought me a pair of walkie-talkies, which back in the 60s, you remember what they looked like, cheap, imported from Japan. They came with carbon batteries, but I remember being absolutely fascinated that you could talk wirelessly. They all worked on channel 14 of the CB frequencies, and somebody out on the street was on the same frequency, and I was able to talk to them. And it was sort of like, you know, if you will, your first QSO. And boy, did the bug bite hard. I've always been a researcher, a studier, so I went to the library. I said, what's the Dewey Decimal Number for ham radio books? And it's 621. If you're ever in a public library, if you can find the 621, you'll find them all. And really, from about 6 on, started learning, studying. My parents had no technical inclination at all. It was just one of those things that sometimes people just get bit by. And when I finally was old enough to go sit for an FCC exam at age 11, that's what I did, and I've been a ham radio operator ever since. First contact actually was, looking back on it, Rare DX that I didn't really fully appreciate. I was living in San Diego at the time, and so was able to get into the Pacific, and it was one of the small islands, and somebody was actually out working there, and I hit him quite by chance. It was one of those lucky deals. And I think the thing that I remember is, wow, this is easy. You hear people say how hard they have to work, and it seemed very, very simple. I realized that that was kind of living in a fool's paradise temporarily, but it was amazing that just a cheap wire, I didn't really understand antennas at the time, strung not very far off the ground, was able to make that kind of contact. And it's been that magic that's been really just an amazing part of this hobby ever since. That was just minimal equipment. I was a ham radio operator for years before I had the financial resources to get a rig. But the first HF rig that I got was a Kenwood TS-520, which I think a lot of people enjoyed that as a first rig. And every time you come to a ham fest or a hamvention, you always end up with more ham equipment. And so the collection keeps growing. But that was a great radio. I actually still have it. I used to tell people in a past life I was an electronic engineer, particularly an analog engineer, and that absolutely, positively was due to amateur radio. I went in and studied electronic engineering. I never told anybody this, ostensibly so I could learn to design my own radio, something I still enjoy doing today. I've since moved into the IT side of the arena, a few too many years in graduate school, and kind of shifted into that. And still to this day, wireless networking, different things like that, I feel like I'm better off and understand much more completely because of my background in amateur radio. And I love the convergence of the two. They're really wonderful.
What is your claim to fame in ham radio, if any?
I enjoy building. A lot of people have different things that they like. I don't operate all that much. What I like to do, again, is design and build everything from receivers and transmitters to antennas and different things like that. That's still how I scratch that engineering itch. And once I get it all developed and built, it tends to end up on the shelf and so forth. I'm doing a lot more with software-defined radio, and that's a whole new field. It's just absolutely fascinating. And if people haven't taken a look at that now, that's really neat and something that everybody ought to get a little bit of experience with.
You mentioned San Diego. I was born in La Jolla, grew up in Ramona, and I moved to Escondido when I was 8.
Well, we're old colleagues then from back then. Of course, La Jolla was a really nice neighborhood. If you're not familiar with San Diego, La Jolla in Spanish means the jewel. I haven't lived there in a while. I live now in the southern United States, but San Diego's certainly grown since the time that you and I were there, but still a very, very pretty town, a very active amateur radio community, and just a fun place to be if you can afford the habit. I actually live just north of Nashville, Tennessee, over the border in a town called Bowling Green, Kentucky. All of your listeners who drive a Corvette or wear Fruit of the Loom underpants, thank you all very much. Those are our local industries, but all of your Corvettes were actually built in Bowling Green, Kentucky.
What took you there?
I'm a university professor, and if you know anything about university professors, we tend to be gypsies. We have to kind of follow opportunity where it leads us, so I teach at a local university there. I teach information technology, computers, and business, a whole wide variety of things, and it's been a fun career. I tell people it's the longest I've ever had a job. I've been actually a professor now for just over 20 years.
How has the whole university concept changed in 20 years?
It's changed radically, and again, a lot of that due to technology. 10 years ago, we were doing very well as far as our students and so forth, but all of our students were right there locally. We would come to class, we had computer labs, we'd meet them there. Today, I almost don't ever teach a class face-to-face with students. My students are distributed all over the Eastern United States. We have students in Germany, we have students in Afghanistan, students in Iraq, things like that. And so the power of telecommunications and computer technology really has changed the traditional classroom, but I think it's also made higher education much more available to people.
You miss that face-to-face approach?
Part of me does. One of the things I love doing is public speaking. It's something I do as a sideline and really enjoy. And to a certain extent, when you're teaching a face-to-face class, there's a certain amount of showmanship. It's part of the equation. And yeah, you do miss it. Absolutely. But by the same token, it's neat to be working with students that live in such a wide variety of areas. I mean, consider this. You have a student who contacts you via email and says, I'm sorry, my homework's going to be a little bit late. We were out in a firefight in Iraq. Well, that's just fascinating. And the kind of stories that you hear, and of course you can turn that in late. Absolutely. So you trade the one with the other, but it's been just a wonderful career.
Are you by chance active in Toastmasters?
I have been in the past. I'm a platform speaker. It's one of my sideline businesses, and I speak all over the United States. Absolutely love it. I don't speak so much on ham radio topics, but mostly these distance education topics and different technology types of things, and absolutely enjoy that. That's been a fun career as well.
I've been in Toastmasters 30 years.
Oh, it's a wonderful organization. I'm thrilled that you're involved doing that. I think of a lot of our colleagues, a lot of ham radio operators are involved in the technical professions. And I don't mean to make broad generalizations, but when you think technical person, very often you don't think good, solid verbal communication skills. But boy, I'll tell you, in today's economy, soft skills, professional skills, and certainly verbal communication skills are absolutely critical.
You're listening to a conversation between Western Kentucky University professor Dr. Jeff Butterfield, N7TJB, and Rains Hapali, KC9RP, conducted in the Rain Booth during the 2012 Dayton Hamvention. We'll conclude this conversation in a moment. This is the Rain Report, available on Twitter.
Soft skills really refer to your personal skills, your written communication, your verbal communication, your ability to work with teams, your professionalism, all things that I think we take for granted, but you'd be amazed, particularly the younger generation, really have little concept of, and increasingly the employers, for example, that we work with, they want people with sound technical skills. The assumption is a student coming out of electronic engineering, computers, IT, etc., they expect their skills to be solid technically. But if they don't have really good soft skills or professional skills, they don't want them. And I guess we can both do a shameless plug for Toastmasters. It's really worth people's time, and you can really enhance your career in a big way by getting involved in that. And you think, well, I'll never be a platform speaker. Well, maybe so. But in your profession, there's more than ample opportunity to be speaking at meetings, board presentations, different things like that. In fact, I was an engineer. And the way I got to be a professor was they had me up doing speaking. They said, wow, we've got an engineer who can get up in front of an audience and speak. And suddenly I was up making presentations to the senior administration and bosses and so forth. And it was finally one individual that said, we need to get you into graduate school and move you into engineering administration. And that's how I got back into grad school and just never found my way back, stayed in higher ed, so to speak. But it was actually the public speaking that really moved me from the technical into what I'm doing today.
What's happened that the educational system has let these kids down and not teaching them better soft skills?
That's a great question. I sort of think that probably computers and the internet perhaps are a little bit to blame. I look at my own kids, and they're not really engineering types, but they're absolutely addicted to computers. And I'm sure a lot of kids are. How many kids today spend all their time playing video games or surfing the internet? My teenage daughter doesn't ever use the phone. You probably remember what teenagers were like back in our day. They'd be on the phone for hours, and you couldn't get an incoming call. They don't call each other anymore. They text message each other. They're on social networking sites like Facebook. And so their whole ability to interact live with people just hasn't fully developed. And then they get out into the workplace, and they tend to be still introverted, have poor interpersonal skills, things like that. So not a bad opportunity, though, for people, again, who are interested in organizations like Toastmasters developing these skills. Because if you've got the technical skills, and kids today do, and you have good, solid soft skills, the combination is absolutely unbeatable.
It's kind of ironic because they're so educated in one area, but not in everyday communication skills.
Part of that, too, might be in the public schools. You certainly hear about this. Every state has its own testing system, this no child left behind mentality and so forth. And we see that where I live. The teachers, bless their hearts, are forced to teach to these tests. And so they've really narrowed down the curriculum. Unfortunately, I took public speaking when I was in high school. I don't even know that they offer it anymore, and it's kind of a shame. I hope they get that kind of corrected. I hope that mentality of teaching just to the test, I think they're starting to see that there's issues with that. Hopefully it'll come back around.
Well, the pendulum usually does swing one way, and it eventually comes back.
Well, it sure swung one way right now. We're suffering from that. But I think, again, when there's problems, that also presents opportunities. Kind of back to the Toastmaster thing. Great opportunity, great organization. If you're good technically, and a lot of people are, go develop those other skills as well, and you'll find the combination, again, to be absolutely unbeatable and really will contribute to your professional success.
Engineers generally do not communicate well.
That's a stereotype that I think has a lot of validity to it. And unfortunately, then, when you talk with administration and management and so forth, they kind of pinch their nose and say, oh, those engineers. You know, you need them. They're sort of a necessary evil. But that lack of communication ability and everything else tends to be a liability as well. And that's why I was such an anomaly. They said, wow, you'll get up and speak and make presentations and write reports and do all. Absolutely, I'd be happy to do that. And off we went, off to the races.
How was it that you took public speaking in high school?
That was kind of a rarity. That was just sort of like that ham radio thing, somehow or another. And I couldn't really articulate a particular event, but I've just always enjoyed it, which is odd because they say that the fear of public speaking for most people exceeds the fear of even death, which I know is absolutely true. And I'll tell you what, put me in front of a stage of 200 people and I'm off to the races and I absolutely enjoy it, have all of my life. And so a public speaking class and participating in speaking events and so forth in high school was just a natural.
This has been another 2012 conversation conducted in the Rain Booth at the Dayton Hamvention with Western Kentucky University professor Dr. Jeff Butterfield, N7TJB, by Rains Hapali, KC9RP. Just a little over a month to go until another round of conversations will be recorded for the Rain Report, along with dozens of forums at the 2013 Dayton Hamvention. More about that, plus an interview with the Hamvention General Chair, coming later this month. The Rain Report is copyright 1990-2013 Rain, all rights reserved. Now, for all those connected with the Radio Amateur Information Network, I'm Kent Peterson, KC0DGY, bidding you a very 73 from the Rain Report. www.therainreport.com